Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann, and I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres. Making some moves, Nick.
Making moves. We're just, you know, one of the teams that's trying to get better every day, right?
Yeah, I want to believe that, but when you sign someone like Pagan again for a whole nother year of giving up big bombs, I don't know if we're trying to get better for just... I don't know what we're doing, Nick, but we're making trades. We're doing things.
Well, let's ask our other co-host, Dallas McLaughlin.
We haven't
heard your Bob Melvin takes yet.
Oh, he's great.
He's great.
Good baseball guy. Good baseball mind. Really great baseball.
Well, he solves everything for us.
Yeah, I have no take on Bob Melvin. Great. All I wanted was a veteran manager, and that's what I got. And now it's all clearly Preller's fault from here on out, and it can't be disputed. And I love it.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you on that.
There you go. Yeah. Quick and concise.
I'm just excited that we signed Jorge Alfaro. I mean, the number one priority this offseason was a fourth catcher.
Don't spoil our first 30 minutes,
Dallas. Okay. Sorry. I apologize. Yeah.
Well, we have a very special guest today. Dan Zimborski from FanGraphs is here. Hey, thanks for coming on, Dan.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks. How's it going tonight, guys?
Hey.
Great.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of an awkward time in the world of baseball. In the last, week or so, the owners have spent $1.5 billion on free agents, and they're talking about locking out the players possibly tomorrow. Dan, what's it like working in baseball in your capacity in a situation like this?
It's a little weird because, for instance, the president of the Baseball Writers Association this year, Trent Rosecrans, sent us a message that after midnight, teams will not talk about players on the 40-man roster. So get all your quotes tonight. It's like a trade deadline, but it's like a bad trade deadline because it's a normal trade deadline. You're like, oh, stretch drive, playoffs. For this so-called trade deadline, It's you know, work stoppage and no signings, because MLB has gotten all this, you know, positive attention for signings the last few days. So let's just have nothing happen for a month due to labor strife. I don't think a lockout was necessarily needed. I think it would have been more productive if they had agreed to continue working under the old rules while they negotiated new rules. But I guess Manfred doesn't like baseball all that much, so he doesn't really miss it much. I never understand. MLB loves to shoot themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. When I think of Bob Manfred, I think of a shrugging, confused child who's just, that's Bob Manfred face. Like, what? I don't know what's going on. But yeah. What do you guys think about this kind of focused signing period? Do you think that's something that baseball should adopt going forward? I mean, the NFL and the NBA, they have this period in their offseason where they're able to dominate the media landscape and really be a part of the conversation when they're not playing games. I mean, do you guys like this focused signing period?
I mean, I think it's great. I remember like a few years ago when there was this weird moment where it seemed like everything was happening at once, and it didn't seem like it was planned. It just all kind of cavalcaded on itself. And I feel like that's happening again right now. And it's fun. It's like fun to know that things are actually going to be happening and you're not sitting there. I mean, it's what makes the trade deadline so fun. It's like you actually have a date where things need to happen by, and it's not just floating in the air. So I enjoy it.
It's like me whenever I have a deadline to do anything. So I get it done at the last minute. I think they could make kind of a modified version of this work long-term. Like, say, have signings be open from the end of the regular season until, say, the last day of the winter meetings, then kind of shut it down for the second half of December, maybe the first week of January, because you get a lot of overlap with holidays at that point. People aren't paying attention. You have bowl games, all that going on. And then kind of, you know, maybe resume that, say, a month before spring training opens. So say January 12th or something, it reopens again. I think you could create that kind of interest and kind of push the news and the signings to where baseball can actually get attention for things, positive attention, which of course isn't always baseball's shtick. there are ways to make it work. It is funny. Trade deadlines are very fun. They're very tiring too for a writer. Usually you end up sleeping about 2 hours a night for 4 or 5 days before the deadline, and then you kind of sleep for a week after that. But for baseball's interest, I think this kind of condensed baseball action is a good thing.
Yeah, I don't think you need to tell us how tiring a trade deadline is. This last deadline, we had Max Scherzer, and then we didn't, and I think I slipped into a coma for 4 days after, so it's pretty tiring.
I actually started writing a Scherzer to San Diego piece, and then my editor, Meg Rowley, messages me on Slack and says, "Hold on, Dan. Yeah. Not going to San Diego." Well,
there were tweets that would make you think that that was going to happen. So yeah. I think you're right. No shots at Dennis Lynn, but you know, that did happen.
I have a graveyard of articles like that, that I've written over the years, that things happened and then the trades or the signings didn't happen. I have a Jason Bay to the Rays piece somewhere. I have a Cliff Lee to the Yankees. That piece was actually complete, and ESPN was ready to publish that at the time when the trade closed, and then he didn't go. I think it was the time he went to Philly. My timeline's a little scrambled in my head, but it's I think every writer kind of has some kind of lost pieces of that nature, simply because it's hard to get straight answers from people in baseball sometimes. So you are dealing with a lot of rumors and things that people tell you that they want you to possibly leak out there. It's very obnoxious. I'm glad I don't report things for a living. That mostly I get mad at things and crunch numbers for a living, so I don't run into that too much.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Ed, it's funny you brought up the trade deadline, Dallas. Last week we had closure to the Adam Frazier era. The Padres traded him for Ray Kerr and outfielder Corey Rozier. That was a interesting trade that they. It was slightly before the trade deadline, but that ended up being their big move at the deadline. And it seemed like it really left the clubhouse off balance. I mean, what was your read on that whole situation, Dan? I mean, the Padres did not trade Eric Hosmer. We'll get to him later, but we didn't trade him, and we ended up having Adam Frazier, and it ended up with Tatis in the outfield and the fan base kind of wanting Jake Cronenworth to play first base. And what was your read on that situation?
I think as it stands right now, the Padres still see Cronenworth as a second baseman, which makes sense. You have a guy who can play second base. It always seems a little weird and short termish to just simply move him to first base. And because you're taking away a chunk of his value. He's just not as valuable as a first baseman. It just comes down to a numbers thing. Hosmer, of course, is a difficult player to trade because at this point, pretty much everyone in baseball knows that contract's kind of a dead thing. I think most did in when he was signed, but even fewer now would be willing to pick up such a deal. And to do that, it would involve prospects. And there's something psychologically difficult about that when you're not just losing money, but you're also essentially selling a prospect to get rid of a player. And there are ways that can be justified, but sometimes it can be a little difficult to say we gave up this prospect to get rid of this person. Now, again, it has to be done sometimes. And I do think the Padres need to move on from him at first, because you don't improve by not addressing weaknesses. But it is difficult to move him, especially on such a short time frame.
Yeah. I mean, not to spoil your Zips projection for 22, but I mean, what do you think? I mean, if Hosmer is on this roster next year, it's going to be bleak, right? I mean, he it's not going to get better for him.
Yeah, it's going to be more of the same. There was a time in 2020 where he had he was hitting balls with more loft and he was getting results from that. And as the little mini 2020 season went on, that launch angle went down. You saw a lot more grounders. And this year it was kind of back to the old Hosmer, which he was essentially the comparison I always make is Willie Mays Hayes in the Major League movies. He was supposed to hit balls on the ground, or you know, or Lou would make him do push-ups. Right. But so Eric Hosmer is essentially slow Willie Mays Hayes. Actually had the projection. I don't know if you actually want to know what the projection is for Hosmer, but Zips projects Hosmer at a 256 batting average, 315 on base percentage, .393 slugging for 0.7 WAR.
Mm. Sounds like a great first baseman to me. I don't see any problem with that.
Maybe he won't pick up those player options.
Yeah, maybe he won't. Well, yeah, I mean, I see people on Twitter talking about how, you know, maybe he just needs a new situation and another team would be stupid to pass on him. But I think that's just wishful thinking. Like, I mean, is there enough? I mean, do you think if he was in another ballpark, I guess it doesn't really matter if he's just hitting it on the ground all the time.
I think his approach is kind of a problem because he doesn't hit in any way for power. He's not a high average hitter. He can't pretend he's Tony Gwynn out there. If Tony Gwynn wants to hit a certain way, you let Tony Gwynn hit a certain way because he's very good at it. I think that if any team really thought he would turn it around, he'd already be gone. Like if the Royals thought he could turn it around, the Royals probably would not demand top prospects from the Padres in order to bring Hosmer home, so to speak, because they love that kind of thing in Kansas City. Obviously, they would need some salary amelioration, but I just don't think that there are many takers out there for Hosmer, except at a huge price. So it's one that the Padres have to say, do we prefer the money or do we prefer hanging onto the prospects? Because there's no savior going to swoop in and just take Hosmer off our hands.
I think the biggest complaint people have with Hosmer is, like you said, like if you let Tony Gwynn wants to hit a certain way, you let him hit a certain way because one, he's going to put the work in to make it happen. And it feels like Hosmer puts zero work in at any point. It's like, this is what I do. This is how I play the game. And that's the end of it. And it really started to show at the last half of the season. It just seemed like his game kept deteriorating. I mean, he was booting balls at first that were routine for, you know, even like CJ Crone could have made those plays at first. It was really baffling. And I think that's what scares a lot of people away from him and makes the fan base kind of hate him. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think the other thing that's scary is that if he's on the roster starting the season, if we have a season, but if he's on the roster, I'm more concerned about if a new manager like Bob Melvin tries to platoon him or reduce his role, is that going to bother certain important people in the clubhouse? It did seem like that was an issue last year, just at the prospect of trading him.
I think on some level, I don't think they would do it, but I think it's more clean if you trade him or even release him rather than reduce playing time. Because when you start reducing a player's playing time, you introduce some clubhouse dynamics because Hosmer, I mean, he's a good guy. People like him. None of this is any besmirching of his character, but you put, say, imagine that they bring up some like 23-year-old to platoon with Hosmer. You put it, you have this guy taking away playing time from someone who's been these other guys' teammates for years, friends in a lot of cases. And that's always going to be hard. And it puts, you know, another role player in the middle of things, so to speak. I think you kind of want a clean break if you're not going to play him. And I think that's why the Padres hope to give him away, because otherwise releasing him is kind of just the safest way. People say, oh, well, you can't eat that money. The money's already gone. You've already eaten that money, so to speak. The money is spent no matter what at this point. So the only question becomes is, are we a better team with Hosmer or a better team without Hosmer? And I think he's at the point, he doesn't have positional flexibility, not a lot of hope of improvement, that I think that given the choice between having Hosmer on the team and having to release him, I think you do have to release him. And maybe then he can turn things around. Good for him. But I don't think the Padres really should be in the Hosmer revival business, because that's like flipping houses without knowing how to flip houses. You just get in trouble.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's say that that both sides of this labor dispute just come to their senses and realize that everybody's making money and there's stars all over the league and we should be adults about this. Let's say that happens. What do you think the Padres should do further in this offseason for whatever is left of a hot stove before the next season?
The good news about the Padres is they're not they're not specifically broken like sometimes disappointing teams are. You look at like the Rockies a few years ago after they fell out of the playoffs. That was a team that was broken in a lot of fundamental ways. I don't think the Padres are in that territory. Most of the reasons you would like the Padres going into the 2021 season still exist. Fernando Tatis is still a star. Yeah, you're a little more concerned about his shoulder, but he's still, you know, a young superstar who they have signed forever. Manny Machado is still Manny Machado. Yeah, there are holes to fill. They could use a corner outfielder. That has to be a priority. You do want to see a little more depth in the bullpen. And as weird as it is with so many pitching injuries, you probably need another. You don't necessarily need to get a top pitcher, and there aren't that many left at this point, but you do want to maybe see an inning eater or two added to the team. I'd rather be in charge of these Padres than another team with a similar number of wins. There were a lot of wins between the Padres and the Rockies in the end of the season, as horrifying as that sounds. But I'd much rather be in the Padres position than Colorado's.
Yeah, I mean, I've been following you on Twitter this week, and you've had a fun week with the Rockies. They're what is that exactly? What are they doing? I
don't know. Well, the thing about me about the Rockies is fascinating, because the thing about Colorado is that most, you know, nationally geared writers don't really care about their existence all that much. You very rarely get much Rockies news nationally. You don't see Jeff Passan do much about the Rockies unless there's a trade or something. What just is maddening about the Rockies is they had such a productive farm system for a 4 or 5 year period from about 2014 to 2018. And they did nothing to seize the advantage of this. They had every year they had an MVP contender and a Cy Young contender, but this team was just so backwards at just finding secondary talent. I don't mean finding extra stars, just finding average players. This team was just so incompetent at it. And they seem to have this way of alienating their best players. First Arenado, then Trevor Story, then the whole mess with John Gray, where they don't trade him because they want to keep him, and then they don't give him a qualifying offer. It's just a very backwards organization. And it's weird that loyalty to your employees is a bad thing, but the Rockies have kind of gone down that path where they're loyal to just backwards, dead ways of thinking, not very creative. And I think that ownership needs to look at themselves as part of the problem at this point.
Yeah. It feels like they put a lot more stock in like Ryan McMahon than they do with Nolan Arenado. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Well, we got a first baseman for him. If they're interested, they can be loyal. You can be loyal to Eric. Those ground balls move real fast.
They did a good job with Crone last year. I don't think many Rocky signings are good ones, but I did like Crone. There's an argument to be made that average first basemen are a bit underrated at this point, and I think Crone's a good example of that. If only Hosmer were an average first baseman, this might be a very different conversation. But I mean, the Rockies extended him at a pretty inexpensive price. So I don't give a thumbs up to the Rockies that much, but I will give them thumbs up for having a better first base situation in San Diego.
Well, that's good to hear.
Nothing else.
Is it good to hear?
I don't know. We're not the Rock San Diego Padres 2022. We're not the Rockies. We're not.
looks good on the season ticket.
What about the rest of the division? I mean, the Giants. I saw that, you know, the Giants had a season last year that I guess they were the most, as far as the Zips projections, it was the furthest away from their preseason projections that you've had since you've had the system in place, right?
Isn't that I've been doing this for, you know, going on 20 years, and the Giants were the most unusual. And they weren't even like typical of teams that exceed their projections by that much. A lot of times the teams that exceed their projections by just lots and lots of games, they have some characteristics that are similar. They might have a lot of hard to predict players, maybe a lot of key contributors coming off injury that surprise. Maybe they're a very young team and they kind of hit that upside at one time. The Giants were none of these things. This was a very established team, but they just got crazy performance out of so many veterans that seemed to be in decline. I mean, Brandon Crawford was an MVP contender and legitimately in the top 10. Buster Posey came out of nowhere. I did think going in that they had done a good job in the postseason or the last winter with rebuilding the rotation, but I wasn't sure about the offense. But the offense was terrific. They got a lot of upside performances out of guys I did not see coming. And the manager, Gabe Kapler, he did a very good job squeezing the most out of these guys. This was probably one of the team that best used platoons since the Earl Weaver days. So the question, of course, is can they do it again? I'm a little more skeptical about that. I don't think they fundamentally figured out something to magically exceed all expectations. The division itself is kind of weird because none of the top three teams have really done all that much in this pre-lockout period. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers have struck out on a lot of guys. They got Daniel Hudson. They got Andrew Heaney a few weeks ago. That's pretty much it. The Giants haven't been super busy other than re-signing a couple guys. Kevin Gausman is already gone, so he's not coming back to San Francisco. Yeah. It's probably to the Padres' benefit that the other teams haven't been exactly burning up the trade wire, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder what's going to happen with the Dodgers starting pitching next year. It seems like that's still going to be up in the air, whether or not they're not going to bring back Kershaw, right? That's over.
Probably. Wow. But I mean, if they started the season tomorrow, of course, obviously they're not, but I mean, you have Buehler, you have Urias, and then you have a lot of question marks after that. It's almost like the Dodgers are going to have a transition season before we start talking about 2023 and 2024, because there's a lot of uncertainty about that. I mean, who knows if Trevor Bauer will ever pitch another major league game? When Dustin May returns? There's a lot of questions. They would probably have to have David Price in the rotation if the season started tomorrow. And I don't know if that's necessarily what they want to do at this point with him. Yeah. Cause you know, the trade wasn't really about getting him, so to speak.
As a fan base that just got to watch Jake Arrieta pitch for real, it's hard for us to make fun of them starting David Price, I think.
Yeah. That was one of those things, because one of the strengths of the Padres going into the last season appeared to be that they had a lot of starting pitching available. Even after losing Clevinger, they were aggressive in the offseason. They had depth. And then it's kind of one of those, you know, narrator fast forwards when all of a sudden you see, you know, Vince Velasquez and Jake Arrieta getting September starts. You think, oh, dear God, what happened? What timeline have I wandered into?
Something in the water.
Yeah. Dallas, did you have a question? Or?
Oh, no. I was just sad when you mentioned Jake Arrieta. I went to my dark place.
Okay. Well, hey, Dan, so you're approaching 20 years of the Zips projection system. Is that, I thought it started in 2002, and then
I worked on it in like 2002, 2003. It basically took me a couple of years until it was something that I got results that I was happy with. Obviously, there's been a lot of evolution over the time because computers can do a lot more than they could 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. I couldn't run Zips today on the computer I was using 17 years ago. And we didn't even have the data that Zips is using 17 years ago. There was no StatCast. Back in those days, I forget when there was a switchover, but people sometimes forget now, but Baseball Reference used to not update daily during a season. It used to be a yearly update about a week after the end of the season. That's when Baseball Reference updated. And it's just crazy to think about now, but that was kind of the state of data in baseball at that time. You'd have to kind of download things from USA Today or ESPN, which we get it from stats. It was kind of a mess. So you could do a lot more things today. It does make me feel old at times because I used to be one of the young guys in Sabermetrics. Dave Cameron and I, we kind of came up together in the Usenet days in the 90s, and we were teenagers, and it was fun to be the young guys. But now I'm 43 and And I see people I'm old enough to be the parent, the dad of, are now getting jobs with teams. And I just feel old sometimes.
I understand.
Yeah. we're all in our 40s too. We're doing this. So that's weird. So what kind of things are you looking for, you know, to year to year as this is going on? What kind of things are you trying to evolve? How are you trying to evolve the system year to year? Are you looking for things during the season that you're going to add during the off season, or how does that process work?
I usually have a version of Zips that's kind of a couple years down the road, but I like to test extensively that changes and updates and newer models are in fact more predictive when I get new text, new data. There's a lot of tools you could use to when you're making a model. There's a lot of cross validation, but there's nothing that matches having new information to compare projections against, to compare tools against. So there's always something a little farther away. There'll be more and more StatCast type data being integrated. I'm very careful with things like sprint speed, because we still don't quite know how those relate to in a predictive sense. There's a lot of things we're still sorting out, what's cool and what's actually predictive. And there's a lot of cool things that aren't predictive that are still cool, but you know, you don't want to just throw those into a model and have it not help matters. Generally speaking, we're kind of at about a ceiling for single year projections. It's very hard at this point to eke out any kind of improvement. And that's why you see the major systems, you know, Zip, Steamer, Pacoda, that they're all bunched up against a ceiling, so to speak, where the differences in any stat or type of player are very, very small. You're talking kind of like fractions of a tenth of a run of ERA apart between like the best and least accurate of the main projection systems in any given year. So it's hard to do it there. So I've been focusing more on things like modeling how players will play long term. I've done a lot of work recently modeling how players playing time is tapered off using inputs such as the contract length, their age, career milestones and such, just to improve long-term projections. I think there's more room to improve there. You know, finding better ways to estimate which players will break out. We're better at that than we used to be. There's still a lot of discoveries out there to make. And I think that, you know, some manner of predicting picture injury would be super useful.
Yeah,
I don't know if anyone will ever develop that, but anyone who does can probably write their own ticket, because that is a thing that teams struggle with. But there's a lot of things to discover, and you know, the more data that's available to the public, the better these tools can become.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if you've ever seen the TV show Pitch, but they did a pretty good job predicting when she was going to get injured. And it was miraculously 5 pitches after her limit. So they did a really good job on that show.
It's great when you see that. That's a projection person's dream, is you get to write the results. If I got to write what happened during the season, I'd be really good at predicting that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe someday. Maybe someday it'll be, you know, the simulation will come true and you can just be in charge of it.
Well, I just want to learn more about different health staffs for different teams. Like with the Padres, they have 2 seasons where they basically their seasons gets ended because they lose the starting pitching at the end of the year. Like, is there something to be tracked on that, where you can find out which medical staffs aren't up to par, you know? That's,
yeah, it's hard to do. Now I naturally will assume that the Mets medical staff isn't up to par. That's usually my one assumption. It is interesting, probably less interesting and more unpleasant for you guys, how the Padres' health went this year. And you know, it's one data point, so you can't really draw much from it, but they made a conscious decision early this year to rely heavily on the bullpen to try to save starters. And it didn't really work. The bullpen seemed tired by late July, and the rotation got injured anyway, pretty much except for Musgrove. So whatever happened, it didn't appear to work.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. I think you wrote on in your Fangraph elegy column about the Padres. It was one of the odder seasons for a team in recent history, basically the equivalent of a lighthearted holiday movie for its first two thirds before quickly transforming into a bleak Kafka-esque landscape for the final act. Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, people forget that the Padres had the second best record in baseball for a huge chunk of the season. Man. This wasn't a team that just struggled the whole year. They just fell just off the face of the earth the last 2 months. So, I mean, it's not surprising that there were recriminations and a bloodbath in the front office and on field personnel. You guys were alluding to it when I came on, but Preller is probably out of people to blame at this point because he's essentially the holdover. Next time the Padres have a disappointing season, I think he's out.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. Like what Dallas said earlier, like, I think the biggest thing with the Bob Melvin hire is that's off the table now. Like they can't blame it on the manager, right? He's an unassailable, you know, top baseball mind. Everybody knows he's a good manager. I think that's over. It has to be on Preller at this point. And what are you hear around the league about him? Is it is he tough to deal with? What's your opinion of him?
You hear a wide variety of opinions on Preller. Some people say he's adaptable. Some people say he's inconsistent and can't stick to a plan. It's very hard to get a feel of that because, you know, I know GMs kind of in passing, but, you know, I don't know everything about them. When teams and agents buy data, I don't know their inner workings. I just hit a couple buttons, send off a file. And they hopefully pay me money at some point. It's really hard to tell because there are like a lot of like phases to Preller's GMship during the offseason where they acquired Matt Kemp for no reason. You're like, what is he doing? But he also showed on the other hand some forwardness the last few seasons. I mean, they hired Dave Cameron after Dave Cameron was very critical of them signing Hosmer. They essentially said, like, this guy who just called us dumb, let's hire him very publicly. But it's really hard to get a feel on Preller. If you had me rank all 30 GMs, I'm not sure where I'd rank him. I'd probably rank him anywhere from like between 10th or 25th, depending on how I felt in any given day. So I guess a chameleon in a bit, in a sense.
Well, yeah, I think we all went through the big flourish of trades with the Matt Kemp signing and all that, and then the tanking and the rebuilding. And I mean, whatever you think of Preller, at a certain point, he has to have a winning season in a complete major league season, right? I mean, he can't just be the GM with potential anymore.
At some point, I mean, the Padres have to win,
right?
And that's kind of the problem in Philadelphia. They did a decent job during their rebuilding, but the problem is that the Phillies have never actually been good since. They won 82 games in 2021, and that was their first season above 500 since 2011. Despite, you know, 5 years of rebuilding and another like 4 years of competing since then. And at the end and the bottom line, if you don't produce, you're going to be out. It is funny. My relationship with a lot of the Padres fan base has gone up and down fairly steadily because I was not popular after I blasted the Kemp trade or the Hosmer signing. I was more popular the last couple years. You know, I projected the Padres to win, I think, 96 games in 2021, which obviously did not happen. So we'll see what happens in the next few years.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, like looking back at AJ Preller, I'm starting to feel like he's like the Will Venable of GMs, where it's just like he's just there and he's like doing stuff and nobody really notices. And then either he's a coach one day or he's gone. Like Preller is like never, like he's had like one pretty terrible season as a GM. The rest of them has been just okay or just a little bad or just a little good. And like, he's just there. And I don't feel like anything like that one Matt Kemp summer, you know, I think most of us thought it was so great because it was just made us feel relevant. It made us feel like we were a real baseball team for the first time in a long time. I don't think anybody thought it was going to work, but we just felt like, oh, real baseball players are coming to the San Diego again. But ever since then, it's like, he's just kind of made these moves and a lot of them sound good, but then they don't pan out. And hopefully the changes in the staff he made this offseason will help. But it's got to be his head next. It has to be. If it's not, then there's something really weird going on.
Yeah, you're not going to blame Melvin because Bob Melvin is a safe guy to get. He's not some crazy baseball genius, but he keeps a stable ship. And if things blow up, it's not because Bob Melvin did something. If the Padres go 80-82 this year, it's not going to be, oh, it's Bob Melvin's fault. No one's going to blame Bob Melvin the way, you know, kind of Kapler was used in Philadelphia. Because in Philadelphia, when it didn't work out, Kapler's the young guy. He's got crazy ideas. It's his fault. Well, you know, they got rid of Kapler. He went to the Giants, who seemed to have no problem with his crazy ideas. They brought in Joe Girardi, who knows how to win. But apparently Joe Girardi knowing how to win involved having the Yankees roster. if you give me the Yankees roster, I'll in the late 2000-aughts, and I'll know how to win too.
Yeah,
Preller, he's got a fairly short rope remaining.
It's kind of in the name, right? Bob Melvin. You can't get mad. You can't get mad at a Bob Melvin. Like that's just that's your accountant who maybe did a number wrong.
Yeah, Melvin was kind of like the standard 80s movie nerd name. Melvin. Yeah, exactly. I think one of those nerdy computer guys in War Games was named Melvin. Unless I'm wrong.
I'm sure you're right.
I think the thing with, we talked a little bit about this before, I think, but I think Peter Seidler just likes talking to AJ about baseball. It's almost like, you know how like rich guys, they'll buy like a big yacht or a boat and they'll be on it with their family and they'll realize that they hate them and they don't want to talk to the wife that they don't love anymore. And they go upstairs and talk to the captain, and the captain is this cool guy that can tell them about maritime shit. And they just rather talk to the captain than what the rest of their lives are. So I think that's what Peter Seidler does with AJ. He just likes to talk to him about cool baseball stuff.
Which is fine. It's probably way to run a business that generates hundreds of millions of dollars a year. It's probably not the best idea. I was close on War Games.
I looked it up too. I was looking it up too.
But it wasn't Melvin. It was Malvin. What kind of name is Malvin? Malvin. The two computer guys were Mari Chaykin as Jim Sting. They gave that character who was on screen for 2 minutes a last name, Jim Sting. And the nerdier guy, the thin guy with the short hair and the glasses, was Malvin. M-A-L-V-I-N, Malvin.
Played by Eddie Deason, who was the nerd in Grease. A lot of people will remember.
So of the Zimborski Dave Cameron relationship, who is the Malvin?
Probably me.
Don't overthink it.
the problem, see, I look more like Mari Chaykin, but it's hard to not claim nerdy status. It's like, so what do? Well, I project baseball players using a non-parametric model. Like, okay, you're the nerd in this storyline.
Yeah.
there's no like, I mean, I think my job's pretty cool, but there's no like traditionally cool way to explain what I do. I crunch numbers and get players mad at me. that's not the hero of an 80s movie. Right.
Yeah,
the person who crunches numbers and gets the cool guys mad.
Well, you're the hero of the Kept Faith podcast tonight, man. That's all that matters. thanks for coming on, Dan. How's this going to work with your job now that the sport might be shutting down? Are you going to have projections coming up in the next like month or so?
Yeah, we've already started
it. Yeah.
Yeah. We started the projections already. But then so many moves were being made that my editor says to me, Dan, how about we push the projections back till Thursday again, when nothing's happening, so that we can deal with some of these signings, because there was a lot. I think we were kind of surprised by how much teams accomplished this last week. This wasn't expected at all, at least from our end. But I do thank you guys for having me on. I love every excuse to talk about baseball. And it's always a blast to get to shoot the expletive, so to speak.
Well, yeah, you love can follow
the Malvin.
Follow Dan at Dan Zimborski on Twitter and check out his stuff on Fangraphs and sometimes ESPN, I guess. That's where you can find his stuff. It's going to be an interesting next few months for the sport. go Padres. Dallas, do you have anything to promote? I heard you're dropping a couple storytelling
albums. Yeah, dropping some albums. They're coming out in January. So I'll be bothering everybody about those.
Can we get an exclusive clip for the show?
You know, sure. Let's do that. Not at the moment, but yeah. I can send you one over.
All right. Well, look out for that, guys. Cause that's going to be real cool.
Yeah. It'd be fun.
Yeah. You can check out the Kept Faith at thekeptfaith.com and Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and check out Dan's writing on Fangraphs. We'll come back, you know, whenever the boys of summer come back, we'll be back.
We'll come back.
All right. Thanks again, guys. Keep the faith.